The irony of the guest being from California is obviously not lost on us and our musical selections. We are going to have a fantastic show, and I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive-Thru HR today. Thank you for letting us invade your ear holes. If you're on the Twitters, we do have a hashtag that occasionally we follow, DTHR, Drive-Thru HR. If you are so inclined and you have a question for either Nisha or myself or our guest, Stephen, please hit us up on the Twitters, and we will try our best to respond accordingly. So without any further ado and without any further music or any other things in the way like weather talk, we're going to get right to our guest because he is quite compelling and his business is also compelling. So, Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, and I did like the music. I was rocking out to that, so keep it coming.
See?
But excited to be here.
Awesome. So let's do this for the audience, so that we, you know, make sure that the audience kind of has a bead on who you are and what you do. Introduce yourself to the audience. Give us your pertinence.
Sure. I'm a grizzly tech veteran. I've had the great honor and privilege of serving on the executive staffs of companies like Hewlett Packard, Cisco Systems, Symantec, Sun Micro. The flip side of that coin, I've had the great privilege of building multiple companies from scratch. A few got pretty darn big and took them public and sold them off. So I've had a great career in technology, have gotten to see extraordinary innovations and have seen teams come together to pull off incredible stuff. And I've also seen plenty of corporate drama. I think the years at HP over the last handful of years, I don't know if that was all my children or American history. It may have been a little combination of the two, but very excited to be relocated here now to New York City and going through the challenges of building a team here in Metro New York.
Yeah, not easy. Not an easy fate. And you're probably dealing with a whole lot of HR-related, recruiting-related issues. What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Well, you nailed a big one. And look, the things that keep me up at night are probably akin to what keeps people in high-growth small companies up each night, and that is scaling your team. We're going to double in size in the next 6 months in terms of our employee count. And when you double in size, not only are you dealing with all sorts of onboarding and productivity-related dynamics. I mean, you've got to get great people in and productive as fast as you can. You're also dealing with a rapidly changing dynamic in terms of your culture. And as you set out the big rocks and the goals and objectives that you want to achieve, you've got to bring kind of a Marine force that was your opening team together with your Army force that is your scaling team and build a culture of execution and performance. And that, you know, that's a biggie, and that's definitely the number one priority. I mean, we've got great visions of what we're going to build, and we've got, you know, a rapidly forming strategy and all the logistics that everybody goes through as they build out the plan for their company. But the human factors associated with that are the gate to our execution. And being new in New York, having spent an entire career building teams, high-performance teams in another geography, building that kind of dynamic here in the city is intense and definitely the number one thing on my mind.
Yeah, people might not have missed that you're a California guy moving to New York. Two of the most expensive places in the United States. You move from one to the other. I'm not sure which one's more expensive these days, but anyhow, you make that move, and you make that move because of this wonderful company called Work Market. Before I ask you the next question about your clients and what's keeping them up at night, give us the 30, 45-second version of Work Market. Like, what's the positioning of Work Market?
I certainly think your listeners are going to enjoy the Work Market story and watch the company grow, because hopefully if we execute well, we'll be a great tool set for HR professionals. There's really two sides to Work Market. One, we provide a platform to manage on-demand labor. Big companies, little companies, you name it, any company you could characterize is looking to leverage the on-demand economy. You know, we've all seen the impact from a consumer perspective on things like Uber, et cetera, here in New York, getting your food through Seamless, all of the great tool sets that have emerged. There is a critical need to have a tool set to manage the find process, the verification of talent, the social dynamics of interaction, rating, evaluating, and then the transactional side of paying and being compliant. We build that engine. The analyst community has coined this a freelance management system. I take that as a big positive and compliment. There hasn't been a tool set like this in the past. And then we marry that freelance management system with a marketplace that's very different than the traditional labor marketplaces. I mean, HR professionals have leveraged great tools out in the market like LinkedIn, and all of the data repositories of talent that they pull from, the Indeed, the Dices, et cetera. Our marketplace is sort of a step above that in that it is tailored towards the worker. And just as we're providing the tool set for the enterprise or small business to leverage the on-demand economy, we provide the marketplace for the worker to participate in the on-demand economy. Call it the Uberfication of labor. I don't take that as a negative, but that, in a nutshell, is what we do.
What do you feel? Because I know you talk to a ton of customers. What do you feel is keeping them up at night? Like, what's driving them mad, crazy, happy? You know, like what's keeping them up at night?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's a one-size-fits-all. It really becomes contextual for their environment. You know, look at my previous employer, Hewlett-Packard, a Fortune 10 company, going through a massive transformation in their workforce, wanting desperately to leverage not just labor arbitrage, where you can get the best value out of labor, but moving, full-time W-2-type staff to a variable cost model, being able to do that in a compliant way, being able to do that in a workflow that makes sense for their business. You know, a Hewlett-Packard is very different than a Bank of America, which is very different from, you know, a dress shop in your local neighborhood. Businesses are looking for the most efficient way to get the best labor on demand. And so, you know, that's certainly a big dynamic. I think there's also a bit of a gold rush dynamic happening where, a new set of tools are emerging all over the place. I mean, think back, you know, if you were an HR professional in, the late 90s into the early 2000s, you know, you heard about this little company called Salesforce knocking on your door going, hey, we've got a different model of CRM, different set of tools. And you look at how does this come in to an organization so that you can manage your sales organization differently. It took about a decade for that tool set to become enterprise class. Turn the clock forward to a company like Workday, which I'm sure many of your listeners know very well. Workday has been a fabulous story of a new tool set emerging for HR professionals and really all managers inside of the enterprise. To do talent management, to go through the life cycle of a W-2 employee and do it better than the legacy tool set that characterized the 80s and 90s. And now there is the gold rush is continuing as enterprises are looking to re-instrument for global competitiveness in their own market. It's an extraordinary time of change, and I think HR has really gone from being a bystander in that transformation to being on point. And that's a very different role for HR professionals and a very different set of skills that need to be a part of the HR discipline that weren't there a few years ago.
Absolutely. Well, we are already seeing that, you know, average employee tenure is shrinking and the rise of this freelancers and on-demand labor. So HR got to play some real interesting skills to really find out this on-demand labor and, as we call, the contingent workers. So what do you think, what do you suggest, Stephen, when it comes to companies changing the way they find talent and managing their talent?
Well, it kind of goes back to the comments I was making before, how you leverage tools, and I think tools are evolving and the capabilities are evolving. You know, if you think about, if you can draw the metaphor, and this is maybe a bit of a crazy metaphor in comparing labor to a hotel, but it was just a handful of years ago that if you wanted to book a hotel room, you would call that hotel up or you would go to that hotel's website. And then tools came up that allowed you to look across multiple hotels. And now tools are out there that let you look at tools that look at multiple hotels. So the market has aggregated the concept of search, aggregated the concept of find. And so we see that dynamic happening in labor as well. Trying to drive out the friction that exists between disparate tools of or pools of talent, and being able to look at that breadth of labor in a way that's contextually real for your environment, not just here's all the labor, good luck with that, as it relates to your pharmaceutical business or as it relates to your transportation business. So, a huge modernization of tools. I'll give you another good example. I mean, think about it. In the 1990s, which seems like 800 million years ago, there was such a push to leverage labor arbitrage or to do labor arbitrage. Hey, I can bring on a team in India, or I can bring on a team in Eastern Europe or China that can take a function that used to cost me X in the United States and is going to cost me Y there. And so everybody gold rushed to that environment, and then everybody realized, wow, this is hard to do. It's hard to manage that team. It's hard to tell, you know, do I've got great performers? How am I going to evolve them? And it took a handful of years for a tool set to emerge to be able to do that. Then you look at crowdsourcing. I mean, great conceptually. I mean, can't we use the ubiquity of platforms to provide really ultimately the ultimate find type environment that's out there? And again, tool sets had to emerge so that people could incorporate that into their environment. As we look out into the new frontiers and we look at labor as something that can be Uber-fied, and I don't know if Uber-fied is actually a word, but I think you get, and your listeners get the gist, can you actually build a tool set to manage on-demand labor in all of its context? And this problem will get solved. And when you look out to the Star Trekian future that is our inevitable path, that frictionless ability to find, verify, engage, socially manage, and deal with all of the back-end exchange components of labor is going to be frictionless. And that's the tool set that HR professionals are going to have to immerse themselves in over the next handful of years, because it's going to change the nature of work.
Well, you know what, Stephen? Well, at this point, when we talk about work, labor, and even leadership, we normally focus on this commitment and trust, right? But when we talk about the labor that are contingent or probably, you know, on-demand employees, the part of commitment and the part of trust is some kind of a vague in per se, because, you know, these are the people, they can come and go, they can finish the project and go, they don't have any other obligations. But
yep.
How does that impact an organization who is built or who has built under a trust, who has built under commitments, and who want their leadership to be at the front end, giving the promises and delivering on the promises?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Nisha. And look, I mean, we all saw the Snowden effect. So, you know, I think there is an inherent anxiety in the system about exactly what you just characterized. And look, there's no, I don't think there's any magic wand that makes the anxiety go away. You've got to build an operating system, if you will, for lack of a different term, that allows you to not only vet to a degree that makes sense for your business. If you're in a highly secured, highly regulated, IP-dependent type environment, and you're going to leverage non-W-2 labor, you're going to want to have a set of filters and gates and security parameters that give you the confidence that this is something that you can integrate into your workflow. And it kind of goes back to the goes back to my earlier comments. Unless you've got the tools to do that, it's hard. And then the, kind of the second part of your question is, okay, if I'm committed to leveraging on-demand labor because it provides an economic benefit or it allows me to be more competitive or it allows me to move and do a new business, whatever the case may be, I need to have an environment that is allows me to capture in maybe a continuous improvement type fashion. It allows me to create captive labor pools, so this is a trusted pool. They have reached a certain criteria or have passed a certain bar or whatever you define, and say this is a trusted on-demand labor pool that I can integrate into my workflow. And that's something that doesn't fall out of the sky. That's something that requires time and energy and the right tools to do it. And I think the final aspect to it is really the nature of the business. Some industries' survivability will depend on their ability to leverage on-demand labor. And this isn't just the ones you would expect. This is household, Fortune 100 class companies that, because of the evolution of technology or because of a change in consumer dynamics, their operating model is seriously threatened. I mean, if you were in the payphone business 20 years ago, you were feeling pretty good about yourself. Not so much now. And while that's a metaphor, it is absolutely playing itself out. So companies have to make the jump because they need the economic model benefit to survive. And there, the urgency needs to be supported by an operating model that gives them the confidence that it will work.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking at some of the studies, and it says by 2020, 40% of American workforce will be freelancers. And it says around 30 million people are sole entrepreneurs and independent workers, which is about 10% of American workforce, right? So while you were talking about, this freelance economy, what does that mean to, business strategies? How should they be working out in the future? These are major changes that are about to happen in the business industries, right?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you've hit, I think, probably in this generation, the seminal moment of truth. You can go back to the Industrial Revolution or other points in time where automation, what Henry Ford did with the assembly line. I mean, we're at one of those historical moments of time, and whether it's 10% or 40%, this is a whopping transition. And I think the key, and certainly what we hear, we talk to HR professionals all day, every day. I think first of all, there has to be a recognition that this isn't a trend that's going to go in the other direction. This is a trend that's just going to accrete over time. So there has to be some degree of preparedness. As I mentioned at the outset, I sat at the breakfast table at Hewlett-Packard while we transformed, a very, I don't want to say set in its ways, but a very traditional operating model into a much more modern operating model. It takes executive leadership. It really, in my opinion, stresses the traditional role of the HR lead. I mean, the HR leads in the past, and I don't mean this in any kind of disrespect, but, HR was never the bastion of technical innovation. It was more a, hey, let's manage with the tool set that we have that was really legacy usable and not very contextual, because the way tools were built in the 80s and 90s and even into this decade were not very contextual. They didn't make any difference between a DreamWorks and a Bank of America. So now when you're looking at the tool sets that are coming in, they are very contextual. And now HR is on point to support the CEO and to support the strategy office in bringing to the table the workforce strategy in the context of a go-forward strategy, and technology is at the heart of that. And that's, I don't want to say old school, new school, but, yeah, there's a little bit of that. And that's a real trend, and I'm sure every one of your listeners is right in the wheelhouse of that.
So one of the things, Stephen, you're asking HR to do is with the reality, is deal with the reality that the portfolio of talent, the simplistic view of that portfolio has been for years full-time, part-time, seasonal. Let's just say, let's make the world really simple. That's been the mindset. You have these three flavors. The reality is it's probably never been that simplistic. You've always had, you know, things that are off-site or offshore, freelance or consultants or the other types of definition that don't fall nicely into full-time, part-time, seasonal, et cetera. So you're asking them to can deal with the real world of that. But as a part of this, they've got to reconsider things like culture, things like engagement, these things that are, you know, holy items inside of HR, things that we all care about. Have you given that much thought as to, you're asking them to kind of reconsider one thing, but it's going to have a ripple effect for the organization, right?
Oh, you bet. And you know, I think probably, and look, this has certainly gotten plenty of air cover, and maybe it's our generation that's talking about it, but when you look at the millennial workforce, and what is it, you know, half the workforce will be millennial-based by, what, 2025 or something like that. I forget the specific number that's out there, but, I mean, millennial workers are used to the appification of just about everything. They grew up in a Google era. They grew up in an environment where instant gratification was literally a point away. So when you start looking at, you know, drop a pebble in the pond and the ring expands, and you now see that ring going across labor, you know, there is an expectation that the environment is going to support that kind of dynamic. You know, there's also the psyche of the millennial worker. And I'm not going to be obnoxious and say it's an entitled generation. I don't think that's fair, even though people like to write on that. I think millennials are just different, just as we were different in our generation, just as the baby boomers were different in their generation. And culturally, whether you're a Fortune 10 company, you're going to have 50% of your workforce being millennials. And if you're a dress shop, you're going to have the same. So I think the language, the speed, the social nature, the connectivity, the automation are all going to be very, I guess you could say, commonplace. But that shifts what culture looks, smells, and tastes like. And I don't know if any of us have the crystal ball in terms of what ultimately that's going to look like, but it certainly is different.
Absolutely. Well, another myth that I wanted to highlight at this point, while we were talking about on-demand labor or even contingent workforce, people might think that they are the ones who just can't find jobs. But they are actually creating jobs nowadays. So why don't you talk about, you know, the future of work when it comes to managing more independent workers and on-demand employees? And what should organizations do, some of the steps that they can take when it comes to, you know, finding, engaging, and retaining this talent?
I think there's really two sides to that. There's both the worker side of that, and then there's the how does the organization get rolling. And a lot of people are already rolling. This is not, you know, this wave's been on the horizon for quite some time. I think the maturity of tools now allows people to test the waters. Every company, regardless of their size or scope, has project-driven work and has areas where they can augment their augment their capacity, augment their go-to-market, augment whatever aspect of their strategy by the ability to tap into the right labor at the moment of truth. You can have a very lightweight, transactional use of tools to test the waters. And we're finding, we're working with a lot of companies of wildly different characteristics that are trying to test the waters. And ironically, it's both a combination of I want to test the waters because I have a need to see if I can augment my labor team, and I also want to test the waters because I'm scared to death and I'm doing something that's non-compliant. And that is, I mean, look, that's a big issue, and we all know the regulatory landscape around the definition of a non-W-2'd employee is archaic and needs to be fixed, and then you've got state dynamics and blah, blah, blah. So I think there has to be a willingness to try and a willingness to leverage. I think from the worker perspective, really, the key here, and I used the term the Uberfication of labor earlier, I think people need to be comfortable being in that kind of a work market. I mean, you know, stepping into an exchange of labor is like putting yourself on eBay. And that's, you know, well, maybe it's not, quote unquote, the auction dynamic, but people want to understand what their value is, and people need to make that step. And I think culturally, you know, for people that are 40 or 50 or something in that line, that's probably going to be a bit of a, you know, a little bit of a shock. I think for a 20 and 30-year-old, it would be, why hasn't this happened yet? So I think there's going to be some general or some generational stuff or baggage that's there. But I think the key is the, you know, the numbers and the upside is so compelling that sitting on the sidelines is not a good strategy. But going in an appropriate and measured way is probably a good path.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up, we have about 2 minutes left at this point. And before we wrap up, you know what? Nowadays, there is an app for everything. So while we were talking about this Uberfication, do you think that there is an app to find this contingent workforce? Is that a silly question?
Well, no, it's a silly question. That's exactly what we're doing. So I appreciate that. No, I think we have an opportunity to appify that, certainly from the worker perspective, you know, from the enterprise wanting to manage the process. You know, that's a tool set. You know, you think of Excel or you think of, you know, other tools that are out there, LinkedIn, other tools that are out there, Workday, et cetera. You know, that's a different dynamic. But certainly from the worker perspective, no question about it. It's a horizon that will be it's a horizon that will be breached imminently.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining here with us today and sharing your valuable time and talking more about where our economy is headed and how we can better prepare for managing, finding talent, and even engaging them and build a better business. So, Stephen, thank you so much again. Where can our audience come and find you, connect with you, find more details about Work Market?
Sure. Well, I can be reached at our website is workmarket.com. On Twitter, I'm SWDOutloud. And my email is SWD@workmarket. And I encourage the HR community to reach out and begin a dialogue.
Well, thank you. And have a wonderful rest of the day. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We will talk to you all tomorrow.